everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom engineering and producing the show. It's Thursday. We're getting ready to wrap up September, Tom. It's the 29th. Tomorrow's the final day of the month, and we had one last hurrah. Well, maybe we'll get some more. We had a half an inch of rain yesterday up at our place. Unexpected. I don't know where this is coming from, but it's kind of the last little bit of the summer thunderstorms.
These afternoon and evening storms just kind of popping up,
yep,
and developing into some pretty wild rains.
Yeah, we'll take it, certainly. The Buckmaster Show and the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studio, the radio station 1030. Tucson's voice for trusted news talk, KVOI. We have all of our programs available. They go up on the podcast, up on the website within a couple of hours of the conclusion of the program. And the website is buckmastershow.com. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. With me in studio, Juan Siskamani, congressional candidate in the 6th Arizona District for the United States House of Representatives. Juan, how are you?
I'm doing great, Bill. Thanks for having me on again. Tom, good to see you again. Happy to be here.
Juan served 7 years. You served 7 years, a little more than 7 years, as senior advisor to Governor Ducey. You were the vice chair of the Arizona-Mexico Commission. You did a lot of work on the border, didn't you?
We did. And it was really through the Arizona-Mexico Commission, focused on the trade and the commerce that we see. For Arizona, Mexico is our number one trading partner, Bill. So this is a very important relationship. $17 billion of two-way trade between Arizona and Mexico. This is including exports and imports. Some products cross multiple times before they actually make it to the shelf anywhere in the country. So these are all very important relationships, both on the diplomatic side and the trade side. And that's what, as vice chair of the Arizona-Mexico Commission, I led that for the state of Arizona for the past 7 years.
I think everybody agrees that we need some kind of an overhaul on our immigration laws. To what extent that is, there's going to be a lot of disagreement. But do you believe that kind of stunts like Governor DeSantis did flying immigrants to Martha's Vineyard, is that helpful in any way, Juan Siskamani?
Well, I'll tell you my perspective on the immigration system real quick, because I went through it, Bill. As you know, I was born in Hermosillo in Sonora, so I became a citizen through the process. So not that someone told me about it, or even that my parents went through it and I was born here. I was born in Hermosillo, and I went through the process, the interviews, the background checks, went through the whole long and bureaucratic and slow and expensive process that people go through. And we finally became residents, and then finally became U.S. citizens as a family. No prouder day in my life than being sworn in as a United States citizen. Well, besides the birth of my kids. And since I have 6, that makes it the 7th proudest day of my life. But so the process is long, and it's bureaucratic, and it's outdated. The process hasn't been renewed or updated in a long time. Right now, the main reason why people are coming here is to look for a better life in the terms of working, of workforce, of labor. And these are the things that our system and immigration isn't prioritizing. It's more focused on other reasons why people will migrate here in the past, 30, 40 years ago, when many of the laws that are in the books were written. But right now, we need to focus on why people are coming, and industry needs it, the workforce needs it, and that's where the focus needs to be.
About that, though, is it a stunt like DeSantis pulled?
Well, I think what they're doing is they're trying to add attention and bring attention to the illegal immigration issue that we're seeing, and the border security issue, like the fentanyl record of crossings, and now that being the leading cause of death among young people in Pima County. These are all real issues that border states are facing. You know, the other one that I'm not hearing a lot about, but we should be talking about, it's not only a record number of drugs crossing or a record number of people, 2.5 million people that have crossed since Biden started this border crisis, but also the migrant deaths. That is at an all-time record high. This is something that also adds in the humanitarian piece of the crisis for people on both sides of the border. So this issue needs attention. I think governors are desperate all across the country, because this issue isn't only a border state issue. It's become really, every state has become a border state in this sense, and it needs more attention. Now, I think the way to tackle it is by changing policy, by adding more resources to the border, more agents, better technology and the right policies. That's how you tackle the issue.
How about the top of the Republican ticket, your party here in Arizona? You've got election deniers. Is President Biden the legitimate president of the United States?
Yes. President Biden is in the White House right now. We're feeling the pinch of that. You know, the election in 2020 is over. He's there. What I'm focusing on is in 2022. I'm not focused on denying anything on either side. What I'm focusing on is on winning this election in 2022 and adding some real common sense, someone that can work with both sides of the aisle in this area. You know, when you grow up like me as a Hispanic first generation Republican in Pima County, you kind of have to learn how to work with people that don't think like you all the time. And this is what I bring to the table, whether, you know, whoever's anywhere in the government and up and down, I am telling you, I'm going to go in there and work on behalf of the people of CD6. And we are going to take the House back. And then we're going to hold this president accountable for all the things that he's not doing well.
Okay. In light of the recent news about the 1901 abortion ban that was upheld by a Pima County Superior Court in Arizona, Juan Ciscomani, where do you stand on this issue?
Well, I'll say this. I will never do anything to jeopardize a woman's health. And this is a conversation that is a conversation that should be had. It's an important issue. I am a dad of three girls. One of them is here with me today, the three-year-old. If you hear noise in the background, I am focused on making sure that they have what they need to protect their health and their life as well. What we don't want is an extreme measure like my opponent has of supporting abortion all the way up to the moment of birth. I've been clear in my position. I am pro-life with exceptions. And those exceptions for the life of the mother, for rape, for incest, that's on record. Whether some want to lie about that or not, that's exactly what I have stated and where my stance is. My stance and my position has exceptions. Hers does not have exceptions. And that I have a problem with, and most of America does as well. So when we look at this issue, this is now in the state's hands, and the state is going to deal with this. There's a law that was passed, and now it's on the court to decide which one stands. We're looking and eager to get clarity on this so we can continue to deal with this issue in the most proper way.
Do you wish Roe v. Wade, the decision, had come down after the election?
Well, I'm not going to speculate on what the court could have and should have done. It took a long time, and it got here at the time that it did, and we're all handling the situation. But this is an issue that is important for women. This is an issue that is important for women's health, and we need to be supportive of this issue. And I am of women, of course, given that I have, again, three girls that I'm raising, that I want them to be strong and powerful like their mom is, and they need to have empowerment for their decisions. And that's where my support comes in.
I think the number one issue facing the state of Arizona right now is water and the water rights on the Colorado River. What should Congress do to manage that?
Absolutely. Water is the lifeline of our state. When you are able to build...
Without it, there's no sustainability.
There is no sustainability. There's no growth. We can't sustain what we have today even. And when and you also have to look at the record that Arizona has of managing water. When you're able to build the fifth largest city in the nation in the middle of the desert, that doesn't come because one party controlled all the decisions on water. We've been really good at passing bipartisan solutions around water. We're actually using less water now than we did in the 1950s due to the good usage of technology. Over 70% of the water in Arizona is used by our ag community, and they've become really, really, really good at it. Very efficient through the use of technology, and I'm proud of the work that they've done, all the way from Yuma to Safford and up north. So when you look at the water situation, you have to, of course, make sure that it's going to be there, and also looking for new sources, because when California mismanages their use of water, then we are the ones that pay the price immediately. So what you're going to find in me is someone that's going to fight for the rights and for the rights in Arizona for that water. And also we need to partner with state and even local officials and private sector to find additional sources of water, like the desal plant that is a very strong possibility of taking place in Rocky Point area. As the governor mentioned in the state of the state, there's some partnerships and some explorations going on with that will ensure our water supply for the next 100 years.
If elected to Congress, it will be you and your colleagues. You will have to decide on the future course of how much do we support the Ukrainians. How much do we?
Well, this is a conflict that really the support that we're bringing is to make sure that we have a free Ukraine, and we don't have a bully like Russia coming in there and taking over. I support giving them aid. Now, that aid needs to come with the right parameters in terms of what does victory look like, by how long can we do this. I'm glad that we don't have boots on the ground and forces there. That's something that I want to be very careful with, and that I do not currently support. But I do support the help and the aid to Ukraine at the moment, but we do need to add some deadlines and some parameters around that, and some measurements of what does victory look like.
What's the separating issue between you and Ms. Engel?
There are many. I named some of them right now. The main one is how you see and perceive the role of government and where you want to be. She wants to expand government. She's celebrating the expansion of some of the bills that have passed recently that are only increasing taxes and making it harder for people to be here and live. She's going to be a rubber stamp for what the left has done in the last few years to Nancy Pelosi specifically. And I will not. I will be an independent voice that is going to come in and fight for the values of our district. I was born in Mexico, grew up here, and I'm raising my family here. When you're raising your family, you have six kids between the ages of 3 and 13. Every vote you take, Bill, you're looking at your family. You're thinking about how that's going to impact them. And of course, that by nature means that you're looking at what families are going to go through here overall, and senior citizens and our military bases. I understand this community very well because I grew up here. I worked my way up here, and that's what I bring to the table.
All right, Juan Ciscomani, people can find out more about you at
www.juanciscomani.com.
Early voting begins when?
On the 12th of October.
Very close, isn't
13
it?
13 days, but who's counting?
Yeah, there you go. Juan Ciscomani, thank you.
Thank you so much, Bill.
All right, Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, open right now for lunch. They're open for breakfast 6:30 to 3 in the afternoon, Tuesday through Saturday, 7 to 2 on Sunday. The website's monasdanishbakery.com. Juan, do you like bakery goods?
I absolutely love bakery goods.
What would you go for right now?
A Danish.
Well, they've got them at Mona's Danish Bakery. Open for lunch right now. And, of course, we gave you the breakfast hours. People actually waiting in line when they open the doors, and I don't blame them. Northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. Be right back on the Buckmaster Show. Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Our Friday Focus interview tomorrow, we will be taking a deep dive into water. The new director of Tucson Water, relatively new, a couple of months now, but he's been with the organization a long time. John Kamik will be with us. And right now we're going to talk some more about water. The Buckmaster Show contributor on the environment, Mitch Tobin, director of the Water Desk, a new journalism initiative at the University of Colorado Boulder. That initiative focuses on Western water issues and specifically the Colorado River Basin. Mitch is an award-winning journalist, former environmental reporter for the Napa Valley Register, Tucson Citizen, and Arizona Daily Star. He's the author of Endangered, which shows why so many species are at risk of extinction. The book won a gold medal in the Independent Book Publishers Award. Mitch joins us now on the live line from his home base in Colorado. I think you're in Durango. Is that right, Mitch?
Yes, that's correct. I'm in Durango in southwest Colorado.
Can there be any more beautiful time of year than in Durango, Colorado, with the aspens? Are they turning that beautiful golden color yet?
Yes, they are. I was actually just backpacking this weekend in the San Juan Mountains, and the ones at highest elevation are definitely turning and even starting to peak. I live a little bit lower, down around 7,600 feet, and here the oaks are starting to change, so it's definitely starting to feel like fall.
Oh, it's a great time of year here in the Southwest. Mitch, how did we do in the summer rainy season here in the Southwest?
Well, I'm happy to say that we actually did well. It was a rainy monsoon in Arizona, New Mexico, in Colorado as well. Really, the Four Corners states did well in monsoon. So the drought monitor, which tracks how conditions have been changing, has actually improved slightly. That is good news. However, the real important thing that we're looking at is the snowpack for this winter, because that is what is really the most important factor in terms of the flow of the Colorado River.
Are we reaching a very critical point now on the river, Mitch?
Yes, I would say that we are. Lake Powell, Lake Mead, the two biggest reservoirs in the United States, both are about a quarter full. They have not been this low since they were first filling, Lake Mead filling in the 1930s and Lake Powell filling in the 1960s. And if you look back over the last 20, 23 years, it's been incredibly dry in the Southwest. It's been referred to as a mega drought, and it's one of the driest periods in over years. So waters have been falling, and that is raising a lot of concerns about them falling so low that you might interrupt hydroelectric generation in the dams, and you might not even be able to get the water through the dams downstream. And so that has prompted a federal response, and the federal government is going to cut back water from the Colorado River. It's sort of put the ball in the court of states, at least initially, to try to come up with a plan. They really have not, and so we're kind of waiting in a little bit of limbo to see what happens. But I think we're going to see continued cuts of water deliveries because the reservoir levels have dropped so low.
David has called us on our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. David has a question about water sustainability. Go ahead, David. Hello, David.
Yeah, I'm here.
Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, real quickly, David. Real quickly.
Okay, I want to bring a comment. The federal government is chaining the pinyon juniper woodlands on our federal lands, and this disturbs the land and creates dust, which is deposited on the snowpack, causing it to melt faster, and we lose that snowpack, which will reduce the storage capacity of our watershed. And that policy of chaining, where they get two bulldozers and an anchor chain between the two bulldozers, and they go along the land and they pull out all the juniper and pinyon juniper trees, and they disturb the land. This creates the dust, which is deposited on the snowpack, causing the snowpack to melt faster, and we lose the storage capacity of the watershed that feeds the Colorado River, and this needs to be stopped. I've called my congressman, I've called the Bureau of Land Management, and I get nowhere. And this
okay. I'm curious, Mitch, have you heard about this practice?
Yes, and I think it's an excellent point, because dust on snow, it turns out, is a huge problem, because
wow.
as the caller, David, said, when you have dark material falling on the snow, that causes it to melt a lot quicker. And we see that a lot here, especially in the San Juan Mountains of southwest Colorado. Because of that chaining and all of these other disturbances we are continuing to do to the natural landscape. And so I think that it is a big problem. And, you know, that is something potentially that we can control. You know, of course, we are sort of controlling the weather to some extent because of climate change. But, you know, the actual activities on the ground lead to dust on snow. That is a mitigation, perhaps, and something that we can address, so that whatever snow does fall, at least sticks around longer and can supply water not only to cities and farms, but also to the natural environment.
Why is chaining being done? Is it just a convenience for who's doing it to cut down these trees?
Yeah, I think it's done, you know, just to develop areas or to maybe turn them into more of an area for forage for livestock. But it is, you know, a practice that's been done for decades. It's quite destructive, as you would imagine, having two bulldozers with a big chain between them. But, you know, there's this sort of downstream effect, so to speak, of it creating more dust. And it's not certainly the only cause. There's off-road vehicle driving, development, and just the drought itself has made a lot more dust up in the atmosphere and in the air. So it is a big problem, and I think the snowpack is really the key ingredient to the flow of the Colorado River. And the more we can do to keep the snowpack up there as this frozen reservoir, the better.
So this year's snowpack, as we get into the autumn and winter, this one is, I know they've all been critical over the last mm-hmm. 23 years of the drought, but this one is a really big deal.
It is. It is. And it's important to note that even if it is several years, many years of above average to kind of dig out of the hole, but this one is in particular a crucial one because of the state of the system, and we are entering La Nina for the third year in a row. That doesn't really dictate what the weather is going to be like this winter. However, it does tilt the odds in favor of being drier along the southern tier state, like Arizona and New Mexico, wetter more in the Pacific Northwest, sort of line. It does not guarantee that it's going to be dry in one place and wet in the other, but it does tilt the odds. It's very rare for there to be three La Niñas in a row, so that's uncertainty. So many people are super optimistic about this coming winter, but, you know, fingers crossed. As a skier, I always like to hope for snow and think snow, but, you know, there's going to be a lot of people watching it.
When is the first snow usually come up there in Colorado? October?
You know, there's even been a couple of little brief dust. September, it's going to probably be the first significant snow. It tends to be in October. We may get a little bit next week, but you know, at this point, you know, there's really no snow up there now. But in the coming months, you know, we'll get a better idea. And you know, last year was kind of strange. Started out very snowy in December, then we kind of flatlined in January. So it'll be interesting to watch.
Okay, Mitch, we're going to let you go. Thanks. Good catching up with you, Mitch Tobin, calling us from Durango, Colorado. Hope you have a beautiful autumn afternoon up there, Mitch. Thank you. I ended it just a bit early with Mitch, Tom, because the phone line was kind of like sounded like a pinball machine at point a few different times there. So I do have a few seconds. So Tom, I'm going to do the green things verbal spot right here and tell everybody, yes, we've been talking all week about the parking lot sale at Green Things. I am told there are still some really good buys that are available over there at Green Things, and they are located at 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. It is a 13-acre site, and they've got some beautiful things on and these items on sale. Let's see, what do they have? 15-gallon pink oleanders. $60 for 15-gallon size. That's good. Goodbye. 5-gallon pink oleander, $19.99. 10-inch hanging perennial baskets, $9.99. GreenThingsAZ.com for more information. The Buckmaster Show will continue. Will Humble, former Arizona Director of Health Services, joins us for his monthly visit, talking about public health right after the break.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade, using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana. Plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Thing is Zocalo Village Studios. Will Humble is the executive director of the Arizona Public Health Association. Will's 30 years in public health include more than two decades at the Arizona Department of Health Services, where he served in various capacities, including the agency director from 2009 to 2015. Most recently, he served as a health policy director at the University of Arizona from 2015 to 2017. He continues to be involved in health policy in his role with the Arizona Public Health Association and as an adjunct faculty with the University of Arizona Zuckerman College of Public Health. And we're happy that Will joins us each month. He is one of two dozen regular contributors to this program. Will's area is, appropriately enough, public health. Will, how are you?
Good afternoon. I'm doing well.
What's this award you were just, there was an award bestowed upon you?
Oh, yeah. Was that yesterday or the day before? The Arizona Capital Times does a Leaders of the Year sort of event every year, and I was fortunate to be recognized for a leader in public policy. So they had a nice little ceremony at the Phoenix Art Museum, and so it's always nice to get recognized a little bit.
We had a kind of a deep dive into what went wrong with COVID with Nina Burley. Nina's a former Newsweek White House correspondent, a journalist that's written a lot of books. Her latest is called Virus: Vaccinations, the CDC, and the Hijacking of America's Response to the Pandemic. As you might have heard in the interview, Will, she was very critical of the early days of the CDC, especially when it came to the first big mistake about why we did not accept the test kits from the World Health Organization. Some of your thoughts.
Well, I did listen to the whole interview, and I just be honest with you, Bill, I think that she was a little hard on CDC.
Okay.
Now, I'm setting aside the test kit from the WHO thing for a second, but I think there's been a tremendous amount of criticism for CDC, and I think in a couple different ways, I think people are beating them up more than is really warranted. Number one, and actually three ways. I just thought of another way. You know, one of the things that frustrated people so much during the pandemic was that, you know, the guidance kept changing, you know, like do masks work or don't they work? What kind of masks work or what kind of masks don't work? Like, what about hand washing? How important is that? Should we wipe down packages or not? And, you know, CDC was working in an evolving environment where, you know, the research was coming out and we were learning more through time. And as we learned more, the guidance changed. And some people looked at that as like, well, can't they make up their mind? But that's kind of how science, not kind of how science works. It is how science works. You know, each time you learn more information, you make adjustments and form a new hypothesis and then test that and make different recommendations and guidance. So I think that's one piece where I think, and she didn't pin that on CDC. That was my just ad-libbing right here. When it came to the confusion around the vaccine, I don't think this, yes, their messaging could have been better and more targeted and more accessible, I think, and less ivory towerish. But I don't really have huge grievances with CDC on that. Because the vaccine itself was so politicized, I think that is the dominant reason why so many adults, just decided not to get the vaccine. And then the third piece is that, you know, if you look at and she talked about this, that, you know, how our country had such a high mortality rate from COVID-19. But if you look across all 50 states, you could see an enormous difference in the COVID-19 death rate. And and governors had a lot more to do with the outcome than either of these presidents, Trump or Biden, because the authority for those what we call non-pharmaceutical interventions, that authority lies at the state level. That's the way our constitutional republic is set up. And so you see this huge difference between states like Vermont, which had in Colorado, and the state of Washington, which had tremendously low, well, I shouldn't say tremendously low, but, you know, much lower death rates from COVID-19, and compare that to states like Arizona and and others that in Texas and Mississippi, Alabama, that didn't use those interventions. So I know I went on a lot about that probably more than I should have, but I agree with her with some of that stuff. I think she was beating up CDC more than I thought was warranted.
The launch of the new COVID boosters, it's off to a very slow start, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And in most populations. So for people over, say, 70, it's off to a pretty good start. Doctors that they see, that like my parents as an example, they're 90, like they already got that bivalent booster. And their friends, are in the same boat. So for people over 70, they're in, by and large, that's the enthusiasm is there. When you start getting down to populations under, say, 50 or especially 40, you're right, the uptake's been really bad. And I think in large part, it's because the perception of risk is so much lower, and rightfully so, because the risk is a lot lower for them. And so I think they're of the sort of the either why bother or maybe I'll get it when I get my flu shot, maybe not sort of thing.
And you may want.
I think that it comes down to perceptional risk.
And you certainly may want to get a flu shot. I know I did get mine a week or so ago, and Southern Hemisphere reporting flu is 3 to 5 times more than it was during the pandemic.
Oh, I would expect that's totally expected.
Mm-hmm.
Because the influenza, both in the northern and southern hemisphere, has been not non-existent, but much, much lower than it typically is. Because masking is really it. Enough people were wearing masks to really impede the spread of the influenza virus for both the northern and southern hemispheres. And now that masks are essentially gone, I think we can start to expect to see more normal influenza seasons. And you talked about the huge increase. Well, it's just coming back to kind of normal, I think. It's not that there's a new strain or anything so far. That could happen. But, right, the Southern Hemisphere had, the same strains that are in our vaccine.
All right, Will, I want to talk about the Pima County ruling made national headlines last week, allowing the state's pre-territorial 1901 abortion ban to go into effect. Your thoughts?
Well, the judge just called it like she saw it. I mean, she's looking at, here's the big question, which is, just last year, the state legislature passed and the governor signed a bill that restricts abortion to just less than 15 weeks. And that's it. That's the only restriction. It has to be less than 15 weeks. The governor signed that bill. It's now in effect. It went into effect last Saturday. And the big question is, well, if they just passed that recently, then why wouldn't that be the law that dominates over the 1864/1902 law? It's really both. And the answer is that the state legislature included something called session law. And your listeners who know a lot about state government will know what session law is. But basically, you might think of it as an asterisk that the legislature added to that bill saying if Roe v. Wade is overturned, it didn't say this, but the effect was they said this law does not supersede any other law that's on the books. Meaning the ARS 13-3603, which is the territorial era law that bans abortion except to save the life of the mother. So she just called it like she saw it. And I may have a different opinion about what should be legal, but I don't have a beef with her. She should do that. She's a judge. You're supposed to look at the law, and call it like you see it. That's what I think she did. And I think abortion is going to be illegal except to save the life of the mother for the next 2 years. I do believe that if we're still doing these calls, these spots a couple of years from now, we'll be talking about a voter initiative that will be on the ballot in 2024, which I think is going to happen. And that will in the end, I think that will make abortion legal again.
All right, we're going to take a break right here. More with Will Humble. I want to talk a little bit with Will when we come back after the break. There are, I think, about 10 initiatives on the ballot, and I just want to get Will's take on any that have public health implications. And by the way, we'll do a whole hour on the initiatives next week's show on Wednesday, but we'll zero in on the initiatives in public health after we take the break.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The way we vote in Pima County is changing. Are you ready? The League of Women Voters of Greater Tucson invites you to visit ReadySetVoteTucson.com to learn about new vote centers for easier in-person voting, new voting districts, and changes to the early voting list. Get ready to vote at ReadySetVoteTucson.com. Brought to you by the League of Women Voters of Greater Tucson. That's ReadySetVoteTucson.com. Get ready to vote.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Here's another reason to take a three-hour drive over to Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. If you want to see the world's finest Mimbrace pottery, it is on display in the museum at Western New Mexico University. Just read a very interesting piece in New Mexico Magazine about the museum over there in a really neat 1917 building on the Western New Mexico campus. Find out about things to do, and there are all sorts of activities and places to stay by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. We continue now with Will Humble, who is the former Arizona State Health Director. He's currently the Executive Director of the Arizona Public Health Association. Will, there are 10 initiatives on the ballot, and I understand you say three of them have health implications. Maybe even more. Three of them have public health implications. Let's quickly go over some of those.
Yeah. Three are have direct public health links, implications, and there's three more that are more indirect, so we'll stick with the ones that are more direct. I think the first is, first thing that comes to mind is Prop 209. So this is a voter initiative. They got the signatures to put this on the ballot. It's called the Arizona Predatory Debt Collection Protection Act. And this is a, if the voters approve this new law, it would change the way creditors can get money from persons that owe them money. And in particular, it makes big reforms to medical debt, which is in many ways the most insidious and most harmful in terms of, you know, hurting the ability of people to dig their way out of debt so they can make a living and, you know, be able to afford the things that it takes to raise a healthy family. So the one of the main features of that initiative is that it lowers the interest rate for that creditors can charge when there's medical debt that somebody has to 3%. Mm. So right now it's a lot higher than that. But this would say, okay, you can collect, you still owe your medical debt. Doesn't resolve that. Doesn't give it away. It's not like the student loan thing. There's nothing like that, but they can only charge 3% interest. And right now it's a lot higher than that. And so it compounds to the point where people just, it puts them in ruin, you know, bankrupts them really. Yeah. And that hurts a family's ability to make a living. It also puts a higher level of protection on like garnishing wages so that you can only garnish a person's wage up until the poverty level and you can't go past that. Kind of makes intuitive sense, right? But yeah. Right now you can extract money from someone's paycheck, even if they're already under the federal poverty limit. So I'm a big proponent of Prop 209. It levels the playing field, really. It's not a giveaway to people who owe money.
How about Prop?
It levels the playing field. Go ahead.
Next one is Proposition 308. You wanted to talk about the Dreamer tuition.
Yeah, this is a quick one. We'll go through this quick. So there was a voter initiative many years ago that said if you're a non-citizen, you have to pay out-of-state tuition at community colleges or out-of-county tuition for the community colleges, out-of-state tuition for state universities. And so what that means is people who graduate from high school who are on the DACA program, the Delayed Action for Childhood Arrivals program, they have the ability to go to either community college and pay in community college rates or go to a state university and be able to just pay in-state tuition. And they graduated from Arizona high schools. So we're looking at about 2,000 people graduating every year in this category. So the reason why it's public health is because it puts them in a much better position to be able to get a college or a community college education, which helps them make a better living, which means they can support their family better and have better health outcomes.
Proposition 310 has a public health implication. Fire district taxes.
Yeah, this is there's not a lot of conversation about this one yet, but basically the way so when you call 911 and you're in the city of Tucson, you know, you're going to get a quick response. You know, you've got the city of Tucson Fire Department and the paramedics that are there that can come in and help you, and they give a really quick response time and so forth. So that's the urban EMS or emergency medical system that we have. In rural parts of the state, which a lot of your listeners are in, they know if they live in a fire district that the response times aren't there. But it's not, this bill isn't going to really fix, this initiative isn't going to totally fix response times because rural places, it takes longer to get there. But these rural fire districts are really woefully underfunded. And so they just do not have the training that's needed, the equipment that's needed, the vehicles that they need to provide a good response. And so what this, and the reason is because these fire districts are stuck with raising property taxes in some of these really rural places, and it's just the money isn't there to provide a professional emergency medical service. So I'll get to the point. What this does is it has a 1/10 of 1% sales tax statewide that would go to these about 120 rural fire districts to help them professionalize what they're doing out there in the field, help them get better equipment, and so forth. And to get a sense of what 0.1% is, let's say you spend $100 at Home Depot or at a restaurant or something like that, it would be an extra dime. And so I think this is a good investment and would really help professionalize really rural emergency medical services. And it's not a free lunch for these fire districts either. It's the lion's share of the funding is still going to come from those local property taxes, but it's going to help out those districts that just don't have the tax base to support a professional emergency medical service.
Will, before we go, this electric vehicle infrastructure plan from the Arizona Department of Transportation, does that have a public health implication?
Yeah, this is not a voter initiative. It's an action taken by ADOT, Arizona Department of Transportation. Kudos to ADOT, really. They have really good leadership at the Department of Transportation here in Arizona, and they put together when the Inflation Reduction Act, excuse me, not Inflation Reduction Act, the previous one, the Infrastructure Act passed, it had money to build out electric vehicle charging stations along the interstates. This is federal money. And one of the reasons that's important is because one of the barriers why people don't buy electric vehicles is they figure, well, if I'm in Tucson and I have to drive to Prescott, I'm not going to be able to make it in my electric vehicle. And what this would do is create more charging stations. So, for example, maybe there'd be a charging station at that rest stop between Phoenix and Tucson where you could then pull over, get a charge so that you can make it all the way to Prescott. So kudos to ADOT for putting together a great plan. The U.S. Department of Transportation approved their plan. We were one of the first states to get the plan approved, and they're already working on contracts to get these electric charging stations out there so that people have less anxiety about getting an electric vehicle because they won't be able to use it to drive longer distances.
All right, Will, before we go, where can people find out about what you're doing? And I know you've been very active now blogging.
Yeah, so we're at the Arizona Public Health Association, so you can put that in Google, or you can go to azpha.org. And like you said, the main content is really up on my blog, and I put a new thing up every day. I try to keep it relevant and content that you're not going to see other places.
Okay, Will, and I was thinking about the whole water issue, about that has a public health implication, too. Think about, as we get less and less water, think about the dust levels.
Yeah, that's right. And, we're going to be talking about water for a long, long time.
Yeah.
We've got to improve our laws. The Groundwater Management Act back from the Babbitt administration did a good job at managing aquifers in the urban parts of Arizona, but it exempted these rural places that are getting sucked dry. And they're in a world of hurt now, and it's only going to get worse. We've got to get a better handle, especially on rural water.
All right. Well, we're going to have to run. Seems like just about everything has a public health implication, doesn't it?
In the end, it does, yeah.
All right. Will, have a great day. We'll talk to you next month.
All right, my pleasure.
All right. On behalf of Will Humble, Tom on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Hope everybody has a great afternoon.